Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the show. My first guest is going to be with us in just a second, but first I wanted to remind you that you can listen to over 500, oh, that's a lot, 500 interviews, one-minute highlights, bits of information from advisors, authors, and thought leaders. Now, to make it easy for you, we've put them all into 35 different category file folders on the audio library at exitcoachradio.com. So you can click on there, find a topic you're interested in, and listen to great speakers, authors, again, advisors, and thought leaders on a variety of topics. So my first guest today is George Wunderlich, and he's joining us from the National Museum of Civil War Medicine in Frederick, Maryland. And in addition to being a museum, they are the home of the Letterman Institute, which specializes in advanced military medical management training and corporate management and mission awareness training. So we're going to talk to George and learn what he's learned about his training, and I think it's going to be a very interesting interview. So, George, welcome to the show. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
George, the National Museum of Civil War Medicine, it sounds intriguing. I'm sure there was some very interesting methods employed during the Civil War, and I myself have been back into the area of Shepherdstown, where I have some families that live there, and seen some of the battlefields. I think it's a fascinating area. It really is. Tell us about the National Museum.
Well, we're kind of an unusual place because I think most people come here with this idea that everything they need to know about Civil War medicine they learned in the movies, and quite frankly, it was either not terribly exciting or way too gross for anyone to really want to think about. And so a lot of people are shocked to find that we've expanded our operations just in the last 10 years from one museum to three. And the reason for it is although historians really haven't been highly tuned to it, Civil War was not only a watershed, but actually a revolution in American medicine, both scientifically, but more importantly, organizationally. And what we see in the organizational restructuring of medicine, both in the Union and Confederate side, we see surviving 150 years. And one of the things I tell people is how many programs that have been started in the military 150 years later are still considered state of the art. And they have a hard time answering that question. I say, well, I can name one, and that's emergency medicine and evacuation, because we're still running those protocols 150 years later. And that's really the beginning step for us in what turned into the military and corporate leadership training that we now offer.
Yeah, some of these battles just had massive numbers of casualties, and they probably invented things like triage out of this and, you know, just the organization of emergency medicine, like you said.
Yeah, it was one of those things. I mean, if you think about it, just the Battle of Antietam, which is still the bloodiest day in American history, in a single day we have over 6,800 men killed. In total, we have 23,000 casualties. Now, that's more than 9/11. That's more than D-Day. And you're talking about, unlike 9/11, where every fire station, every firefighter, dozens of modern, professional, well-equipped hospitals, literally thousands of doctors and nurses who were in the New York City area were there to take care of those folks. We're talking about the middle of a cornfield in the middle of Maryland in 1862, where the numbers of caregivers are much smaller, the numbers of ambulances are much smaller. And what came out of it, you're right, was triage, and what came out of it was an ambulance system. But even more importantly, what came out of it was tying a direct relationship between what is a field hospital, and basically that's where we get our modern emergency room at every hospital today. But what is a field hospital, and how do we tie that field hospital's chain of command to logistics? How do we tie it to communications? How do we tie it to records keeping? How do we tie it to the movement of patients from one area of care to another area of care further from the battlefield? And what's really amazing is the system we use today was basically invented by one man, a gentleman named Major Jonathan Letterman. And his system is still the basic framework that we use, whether we're talking about the streets of New York City or Boston during the Boston bombing, or whether we're talking about the battlefield of Afghanistan. What you saw 2 years ago at the Boston bombing in April of 2013, what you literally saw on television with the ambulances and how people were treating the wounded was a direct result of the orders of October of 1862. And so one of the things we like to delve into is how did he come up with it? What were his strategies? And then more importantly, how personally was he able to carry off such an incredible plan against all odds? The Army really wasn't for it. Politicians weren't really for it. And his subordinate officers weren't really for it. And then, you know, again, you've got to look at it. In the Army, he's a major. He's a middle manager at best. And how did a middle manager come up with a plan so unique that 150 years later, it's still the basis for every major hospital in the United States?
It is. It's mind-boggling. As I'm thinking, as you're talking, it's amazing the obstacles they had to overcome with regards to what they had available for communication, for transportation, the medicine that they had, and how to get that to the right number of bodies. Was this a master plan that was well executed, or was it just on the spot, you know, let's deal with what we have to deal with?
And that's the great thing about this. This truly was a master plan, and it was done in two steps. First, it was done in August of 1862 with the development of a command structure and a specific series of duties for an organized ambulance department. And then in October of 1862, tying that ambulance system to a master plan of what is a field hospital, how will it be commanded, what are the duties of the people involved, how will they carry out those duties, how do we supply them, how do we communicate with them, and what are the records look like. And so it was actually two master plans built into one that would eventually be passed into federal law. And the one thing that set Letterman aside was he understood that the Army had a distinct mission and that military medicine also had a distinct mission that was not the same as the Army's, even though they were in the Army. So he understood really for the first time the Army has a mission and military medicine has a sub-mission. And that submission understanding was vital. You know, in the same way we think about it today, you know, our corporation has a mission, and every one of our departments, every one of our manufacturing facilities, every one of our sales offices has a submission that is very specific to support that overall mission. And then Letterman brought in a third rank, if you will, personally submitting himself to that mission, kind of pushing his own ego aside, and committing himself so deeply to the mission that even people who didn't like what he wrote really had no way to complain that he was only doing it for his own self-aggrandizement. And because of it, he was able to knock down a lot of the walls of opposition simply because people were looking at him and saying, there's nothing in it for him. He's doing this all for the mission of saving our country. We can trust him and believe that this really is a good system, not simply meant to personally benefit him. And those three things, understanding mission, submission, and then the personal submission to it, that's what really set him aside.
Yeah, and to clarify that, you had written this in your show notes too, was that we have mission, we have sub-mission. So the mission beneath the mission, right? This or
right,
submission,
absolutely.
Submissions. There must be multiple submissions. And then submission as one word, submission to the cause, or, you know, this is, you will do this because we need you to do this. We have to submit
right
to this, right? That's very interesting.
Absolutely.
And is that, go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, was that typical protocol? I mean, had this ever been done before in the military where you had to take two disciplines and merge them together? And it seems like this came together rather quickly from, you mentioned, August 62 to October of 1862, and you had these different, you know, you had this plan being put together within a very brief period in preparation for what was very necessary.
Yeah, and it's funny because it did come together very quickly, and by December, when we have our next really major battle at Fredericksburg, by December of 1862, the surgeons are writing, this new system is working well, many lives are being saved, you know, we're seeing much, much better results very, very quickly after the introduction. But this really is the first time, when it comes to medicine, this is the first time where there's a realization that we have to take two things that are completely disparate, saving lives, and unfortunately, in you know, the way the Army fights a war, taking lives, how can those things possibly go together? And quite frankly, for the first 87 years of our republic, it didn't go together, and medicine was an afterthought. After Letterman, more and more medicine became, it really came to its prominence where people said, we can't go and fight without the right medicine. We can't go into the battlefield without providing the right level of care. And, of course, we see that today where we have minuscule, compared to other wars, we have minuscule deaths as a result of fighting. And part of the reason, not all, but a major part of that is we don't go into fights anymore unless we know we have the medical support to save the lives of our men and women in the military. And that changed with this war, with the Civil War. That was one of the quantum changes that came about.
So really thinking with the end in mind, really thinking down the road on these types of things and the preparation and the coordination of all the different. Now, what kind of, you mentioned Letterman was getting a lot of pushback or he was getting, you know, some pushback from the military on some of these things, I guess. Is that what was happening, in fact, or did they get it, what he was trying to do here, I guess, is my question.
That is a great question, and some people really did get it. General McClellan, who was in charge of one of the larger armies right here in the Washington, D.C., Richmond area, he got it, but a lot of people didn't, and part of the reason they didn't is, and of course we see this in corporations all over the place, Letterman was changing the culture, so there was pushback on cultural change. Letterman was changing the way money was handled because now the medical department was going to need a larger slice of the military budget. So people who were worried about budgets were concerned, you know, what's the payback? What's the return on investment, as we would say it today? So they were pushing back on that. And they were pushing back on the fact that not only was he changing culture, but he was changing who would be in charge of certain things in the military, like the ambulances, which had been under field control by the quartermaster department, would now be under medical control. He was taking assets away from people. And, you know, anytime we take assets from one department and we give it to another, there are jealousies, there are concerns. And the one thing that I think really helped him get past all of those questions and concerns and petty jealousies was, again, everyone pretty much knew it wasn't about him. It was about the mission. That was one thing. But the other thing, we don't think of doctors as salesmen, but doctors are some of the best salesmen in the world. You know, I'm going to convince you as a doctor that I'm going to have to cut your body open with a knife and plow around inside you to make you better. That takes a certain degree of salesmanship. And Letterman, as a doctor, understood how to communicate the mission in such a way that he overcame people's opposition, which is exactly what we're looking for from salespeople today, is how do we overcome that opposition? How do we overcome their questions? Letterman did that magnificently, and he's one of the first doctors we see who's able to make that leap from just doing a job to making it about the mission and then make the leap again to how do I sell that to the politicians in the Army. He really did a masterful job. The guy is really one of the perfect case studies for modern management, for modern sales, and for modern mission awareness.
Yeah, I would imagine, and that's a good point. So you are a Vistage speaker, so you speak to Vistage, of course, is the largest CEO group in the world, but so you speak to groups of CEOs about how they can take this very interesting story in development from the Civil War and use it for their own benefit and overlay this and say, what can we learn from all of this? And what we learn is that you have to start with the mission and then and sell the mission and then move to the submissions and then get people to submit to everything. Is that in a nutshell?
That in a nutshell is it. And that's exactly, you put it so very distinctly. That's exactly what we do. We do it, like I said, for the military. We do it for corporations through Vistage. And believe it or not, I also teach part-time at a Catholic seminary. And I teach this very same method to men and women who are going into ministry. And you know, it is one of the universal things that no matter what type of organization, whether it's for-profit or non-profit, military, private sector, even government, this system works. And there's no way around how well it works.
Yeah, and there's a tremendous amount of strategic convincing, or call it selling, if you will, every step of the way. And I would imagine that your tactics have to be adapted to each of the constituents that you're trying to convince or sell of these, again, the mission, the submission, or submissions, and the submission to the mission and the submission. It's fascinating. It really is.
It's a cool thing, and you know, it's funny because we talk a lot about change management, and here's an example from 150 years ago of how somebody really pulled off change management, even though he probably never heard those words put together in his life.
Well, there was a lot of buzzwords they had not heard at that point. That's what makes this so fascinating, is that can you imagine as a business owner out there, for my listeners out there, can you imagine being in this position where you have to move so many minds around a concept of something that had never been done before and prepare for a massive situation that was probably bound to happen, but they probably didn't know. I mean, nobody knew what would happen, but they knew it was going to be bloody. I mean, I've heard groups, areas like Shepherdstown, West Virginia, the whole town turned into a hospital based on the battles that were happening there, the tremendous number of casualties. So it's what a difficult endeavor, and now you have the blueprint to kind of work from to help business owners of today work with that. George, when you talk with business owner groups, I'm sure they're intrigued by the story. I'm sure everybody loves a good Civil War story, but what do they walk away from? Is there a template that you've come up with to help them work through these issues? How does it work?
There is one of the things that we try and do is we bring them, we allow all of the people in the room to kind of bring their own stories forth. And what we do is we give them a template by actually letting the whole room, once they've heard the story, kind of chime in on one another's difficulties, you know, whether it's, somebody in manufacturing talking about that they're having problems getting the divisions to work together. I've got one client that's a hospitality group that owns a chain of fast food restaurants, and they own Marriott hotel franchises. And one of the problems that they've always had is how do they get the people from one division to talk to the people in the other division to support the overall mission? And what it turned out was nobody really understood the overall mission of the corporation. That was the problem. So what we do is we talk through these things. And then the other thing that I leave them is we ask a very series of pointed questions that they can jot down their own answers to, but they can also jot down what they're hearing around the room. We really try and make this interactive in such a way that they can then actually begin to make up a plan right while they're sitting there listening to other people based on the issues that they see in their own business. So it's a very interactive discussion-based model rather than a lecture-based, and it really directs people towards what are the issues that you're seeing. You know, taking the Letterman plan and overlaying it with your business, what are some areas that you can work on? And then we're going to talk in a group in such a way that everyone can hear what everybody's thinking. And it's really been pretty amazing.
Yeah, by putting it in perspective, but going back to these stories, and I know you have tons of stories, and unfortunately we don't have time for any more today's stories, but I'd love to hear some more stories about the obstacles, the challenges that were overcome that turned into what we see today as modern medicine. But taking from that, you know, everybody has challenges, everybody has an organization that they need to manage and put together, and understanding that that you need to start with your mission, your submission beneath that mission, and then working on having your people submit to all of that. It makes total sense. It really does, all in a nutshell. So nice job, George. How do our listeners get in touch with you and learn more and maybe talk to you about being a Vistage speaker for their group?
Well, one of the easiest ways, they can call us, again, it's the National Museum of Civil War Medicine. We're in Frederick, Maryland. If you just do a Google search on Civil War Medicine, we'll be the first thing that comes up. And you can also give me a call here at the museum, 301-695-1864, and talk to me directly. Because one of the other things I like to do is I like to talk to the groups ahead of time and find out what their specific needs are, because you're right, there are a ton of stories. And then I choose the stories that are best going to convey what each individual group needs. So these are all customized. So I'd love to be able to just talk to people directly, and we'll custom tailor something directly to the needs of your group.
Don't you think that would be a fascinating topic, listeners, just to have George come and talk to your group about some of these Civil War medicine stories, just the challenges they overcame. I'm jazzed, George. I'm really excited. Thank you for joining us, and I hope that you can come on the show again in the future and share some more stories with us. I think it'll be fascinating for our listeners, and we can learn a lot from this. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Bill, thank you, and I'd love to do that. I hope we talk again soon.
All right, we're going to take a short break for right now, and we're going to be right back after this with another guest. So please stay with us. We'll be right back. Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you, or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio. Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Again, if you are looking for interesting stories, go to Exit Coach Radio. Look at the advisor. I need my next guest bad. Well, the audio library, we have over 500 topics, 500 interviews, 1 minute highlights on 35 different topic file folders. You can find something interesting there to listen to every day, and we upload new content every day. So please join us on Facebook at Exit Coach Radio. Please join us on iTunes at Exit Coach Radio, and learn something every day with us. My next guest is Scott Bornstein, and I do need him. I think a lot of our listeners probably need him. If you're over age 50 plus, especially, and you're wondering if you're having a little trouble with your memory, you're going to want to listen to my next guest and probably write down some notes. Scott is the chief memory training expert at Memory Power for sales, performance, and profits here in Mission Viejo, California. And Scott's job is to make memory and recall as effortless as possible for business leaders, managers, and salespeople. That's so important. Scott's one of the top 2 memory experts in the world, presenting his methods and training to executives and CEOs of Vistage, YPO, Entrepreneurs Organization, and tech. And Scott's topic is memory power, your secret weapon. Scott, welcome to the show, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you very much for having me.
And you heard, mine's a little bit on the outside, the outskirts there, so I need some help with my memory, too. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do. Tell us a little bit about how you got started, and when did you realize you were a memory expert? I mean, that must have been something that you realized, wow, I remember everything, or a lot of things that other people don't early on. How did you get started with that?
Well, when I said I'm one of the top two memory experts in the world, my father actually is number one. He's still number one in my book, but he started the first memory training company in the United States in 1952. So we've had the pleasure to train people. I've worked in over 50 countries with CEOs and sales groups, training them in a very the simplest, most effective way to expand your asset, your basic, you know, your memory is your greatest asset and your greatest untrained asset at the same time. Every accomplishment in your life is proof of a solid memory, and your credibility depends on it. And whether you're over 50 or under 30, it's still the same challenge, especially nowadays. Your memory really works fine. It's just there's so much more to try and keep track of today than ever before. And I think people are feeling so overwhelmed that the part of the memory that processes and recalls information is being hijacked by all the distractions in your life. And it's easily recovered, and it's easy to improve.
Well, that's for sure. I've said for a long time, if I had a sign on my forehead, it would probably say memory full. It's just so much. I know, you know, you get a computer like 10 years ago, and now it can't handle all the things that are loaded onto it anymore. Memory is full. So what is going on? I mean, we're sent so many messages to try to learn and remember, and it seems like a lot of people are saying, I'm getting that CRS. And you know what that stands for. Our listeners can't remember, you know what. People are saying, I just can't remember stuff anymore. So you're saying, no, it's there. It's just being pushed back a little bit, or it's not connecting as fast, or what's happening?
Well, what's really happening, I call it the Google effect. Essentially, nobody has to remember anything anymore. So because we have all the technology, everything is stored someplace else, but it's not at our fingertips when we need it. And part of it is just training yourself with the right routine to be able to fix, focus, and then know where to anchor and recall the information by just a simple set of trainings that enable you to manage names, facts, numbers, details, presentations easily. It's just about establishing the process and then practicing it over a few short 10 days in order for it to really become embedded. And as they say, it takes about 21 days to hit that tipping point where this becomes the new normal. It's like anything else. It's an activity that you can use to strengthen your recall with a few simple steps, and then it's what you focus on. And frankly, I would advocate remembering less but just doing it better. And that should be your starting point. And then as your confidence and skills increase, then you can expand and increase the amount that you choose to know.
Now, when you're talking to business owners and groups of salespeople, what areas do your tools help leaders and salespeople the most?
Well, clearly the most important is on the human level, the contact with either the engaging the client or the employee. The great start for most is simply being able to recall the names and facts and details of the people that work in the organization. I had one fellow after a program say his goal was to learn all the names of the employees for the holiday party in December, and he said, not only do I want to know their names, I want to know the spouses and the children's names that would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he set up a simple schedule. He accomplished it in a little under 2 weeks, didn't tell anybody, 85 employees plus spouses and kids. And he knew, 25% of the people, but he didn't know everybody, and now he did. And he blew everybody away at the holiday party. Last January, he gets a call from the first day back at work from one of his employees who said, when I got up this morning, my wife said, not only will you be on time, you'll be early, because not only does he know you, he knows me, and he knows everybody in the house.
Wow.
So leadership is about influencing others, and essentially we're all in the selling business in the sense that our job is to persuade and convince and get people to trade time or money for the trust and the promise that we deliver. And we have to be precise in how we communicate that. And one of the areas that I focus in my programs with executives and their companies is, what is it that you need everybody in the room to remember flawlessly, so that when the customer asks about a product, a service, their competition, each person is prepared to say exactly what you want them to hear. It's already on your website, yet when I ask people in the room, give me the top three reasons why I should do business with your company, they all say the same three things, you know, price, service, expertise. And I'm going, but your website says the following eight things. And I repeat it for them just to make the point that I know as much about their company as anybody else who's coming to them in advance. And if you think that I'm expecting you to hear something that's not on the website, it better be good. It better not be, you know, average. So you invested the time and resources to craft your message. Ultimately, marketing is memory training, specifically to get people to remember your message, to get them to align and act on the things that are important in your company or organization. So I help connect the dots in terms of, here's some useful skill sets that anybody can profit from immediately. And everybody walks out feeling like the smartest person in the room, because suddenly they're remembering lists of facts and knowing how to apply them. And then with the simple worksheets that I give them, help them define, is it the message, is it processes and procedures, is it sales scripts, is it how to respond to customer objections, is it maybe you're overhauling the company, or you bought a company and you now have to bring these cultures together and you have to get everybody on the same page. How do you make it possible for them to know what you want them to walk out talking about? And that's what I do. I help facilitate that, and I show people how to do it for themselves. And most importantly, it's one of those assets that will serve you well as you get older, because frankly, the brain and the memory tend to be the last thing to go, unless of course there's dementia, another subject altogether. But frankly, thanks to medical science, we're going to live a lot longer. So we better train and increase our skills and have fun in the process, because this is really play. It lights up the brain and it makes recall effortless.
So Scott, what I hear you saying is that not only is it important to remember, as an asset, but once you understand how people remember, you can become more memorable with the way that you craft your messages to other people. That's very important. Very important.
Correctly. And so at the end of the day, whether you're onboarding new hires that have to learn, your processes or the language around how they communicate with each other, or the jargon that's necessary, you want to be sure. Why not show them how to know that? And that's the fun of what I get to do. I was working with 1-800-GOT-JUNK salespeople, and I said, what do you want people to remember? They said, well, they have to ask a series of questions in a certain order in a certain way. And I said, great, how many questions are there? And they said, 15. And I said, I can do that. And literally within 20 minutes, I had everybody remembering exactly what it was the questions were supposed to say specifically. And that way, they could be confident that everybody knew what you wanted them to do. But the point is that the next group of hires, they already had established the same training learning methodology, so that everybody would know the same stories and the same thinking and the same and behave in the way that would create a consistency and drove results.
Now we hear a lot from branding people and others that have been on the show that, it's important that your employees know your mission, everybody should be able to recite the same message. So this is important what you're talking about. But is there a magic number of items? I mean, 15 seems like a lot. Is there a magic number at which people's memories start to break down?
Well, if their memory isn't trained, usually it's about 5 to 6. And then after that, they lose focus. In fact, for most people, their greatest problem is focus interruptus, not a poor memory. They just don't know how to focus in the way that gives greater results. So what I do is I teach four different systems, so to speak, or in effect, mental store places for information. And once it gets wired into the mind, and here's just a little bit about the research about the brain, is that you need to reinforce information a few times in order for it to consolidate in the brain. And the synapses and the neuronal networks demand this. And most people don't make the time to review or refresh anything, you know, after, you know, after a day, it's just buried. And so part of it is establishing a routine and a certain type of discipline that, you know, enables you to do it in a focused, deliberate way. And in addition to that, it's just about defining which methods make the most sense. There's really only three systems in the universe of memory training. There's what is known as the location method, which simply means you create a fixed set of locations you always visually use to anchor and connect information to. And here, by the way, is the underlying factor of the way the brain works, is that we remember stories best. Our brain, it fires up when we hear a story. And it can be just a word, it can be a name, it can be a number. I mean, for example, let me just give you an illustration. If someone said there's a 10-digit string of numbers that might be useful to know, begins 888-711. When I say 7-Eleven, Bill, what comes to mind, by the way?
The stores, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The Slurpees. And the last four digits are 1215. So you could see, well, you go in and park in front of the 7-Eleven, middle of the day, every day from now on. What time of day is that, by the way, Bill?
12:15.
Exactly. And, of course, all the snacks you buy, you 888 until you're satisfied.
Got it.
But if
okay.
I said now, all I've done is just told a story. But if I said picture those 10 numbers flashing on and off like a neon sign, the first three are the same. What are the first three numbers?
888.
Right? The next three numbers?
7-Eleven.
7-Eleven. The last four?
12:15.
But if I said, tell me that 10-digit string of numbers backwards, suddenly you could picture it in your mind. And what's the last number going backwards, Bill? We have what?
Five.
Keep going.
5121.
Yep.
117888.
Perfect. So the point is simply your brain is fired up around stories. Stories are really the magic sauce that makes, you know, the memory more active, and it just lights up the mind. And the other rule, as I said before, is that you need to refresh information 7 times within 10 days. That's the rule, 7 and 10. If you want the information to get hardwired, your brain requires a little conscious effort to be able to make sure that it's got the pathways anchored and consolidated, and it only happens with the defined, and that's not 7 times a day for 10 days. That would be 70 times. But just over the next times in the next 10 days, pick a day, do a quick review. And then what happens is it suddenly it gets hardwired, and you free the memory space to be able to capture and anchor and remember more because you know that you know. Whereas, again, there is a transition, and you need a little practice, and now it's just about how you then, you know, extend that into other areas. So certainly, you know, names is something that's top of people's lists. You know, my first name is Scott, so immediately you might picture me drinking what kind of beverage?
Scotch.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if you knew that my favorite beverage was Malbec, you wouldn't think of me that way, right? But the point is now you've got a fixed image for the name Scott, and you can see that you can, every time you meet someone named Scott, you can picture them drinking Scotch. For you, Bill, you know, if I go out to dinner with you, you'll always be picking up the bill because you're just such a great guy. But you may not actually want to do that. But the point is that it's about creating a space in your mind for just a moment to allow the mind to creatively somehow create a story and then connect it in some meaningful way to something that is important to remember. But this is just the very simple beginning. What you take from that is that your mind can craft and connect and retain even longer strings of stories that have more items in them, and then, in effect, use that as a launch point to get everybody to think and remember the same story and then have that story tell them, reveal something else that's important, like that number from the story or from whatever the name might be.
It's really fascinating, and it, of course, very valuable if you first meet someone. I have trouble with that myself. I meet someone else, and then I can't remember the first person's name I met because I didn't have a routine down. What's a good routine for remembering someone's name as soon as you meet them? Like you said, I mean, picture Scotch and that kind of thing, but what else?
Right. So here's the three top rules of this. first and foremost, you, as in sales, as in conversations, when people, you know, ask things of you, you need to give, you need, if you say, if you immediately respond, then you lose an opportunity to just slow things down. So focus is really top of mind in terms of give yourself a second or two longer before you actually respond. You obviously will say the name back to the person to give them a chance to confirm you heard it. But in that process, in those few seconds, your mind is racing and working to connect, make, and to make things happen in your mind. So you say the name back to the person. And one other thing that's a great rule is simply, I call it the rule of three, that you use the name three times in the course of a conversation. If you do that one thing only, without any of the memory techniques, you'll increase your recall immediately by 80%. Because you're immediately upping your focus and attention to hear the name. You're going to use the name in the course of the conversation, and then you want to use it once at the end of the conversation. So if you do that one thing, that'll immediately make a difference. But assume for a moment that you have trained yourself in these methods, as I teach, or as you can learn anywhere. And what you would do is you would approach the situation differently. I had one fellow who was being interviewed for a bank president's job, and he walks in, 40 people sitting around the conference room table. They go around, introduce themselves, and then they go on to interview him. And then after the interview, he said, I want to thank each and every one of you personally. Goes right around the table, calls them by their first and last names, and that when it gets to the last person, they jump to their feet, give them a standing ovation, shouted, you're hired. Mm-hmm. And when they asked, when did you do this? He said, I didn't wait till this morning. I knew in advance who was going to be in the room. And Bill, for example, if you ever find yourself, you know in advance who the people are you're going to meet, you already have the list of names. So in effect, you could do a little pre-work in order to make the names unforgettable and then attach it as you meet them. And again, one more thing is that I'm always prepared with a question. So when somebody says, oh, hi, my name's Bill, I go, oh, Bill, that's great. And what do you do? So I'm immediately slowing things down, collecting a few more data points, but giving myself a chance to suddenly say, okay, Bill, I can see him, the bill on his forehead, he's paying the bill, he's got $100 bills, you know, in his pockets, whatever the thing that will trigger. And once I've created that picture once, I can use it for every other bill I'll ever meet again. So what you're doing is
the brain doesn't, when it's racing on to the next thought, it doesn't remember as well as when you can slow things down, and then it can kind of think of the roulette wheel. When it's moving very quickly, the ball can't drop, but when it slows down, the ball can drop. Is
correct.
That what we're talking about? Okay.
Exactly. And think of it this way. In the brain, where the part of the brain that processes memory, it's called the hippocampus, and it's on both sides of the brain. And just above the hippocampus is the organ called the amygdala, which is actually what gets activated under stress. So they're literally right next to each other, and they kind of share the same, you know, energy source. So when you get stressed, suddenly the amygdala is going over into overdrive, and the energy for the hippocampus, which is the memory, gets less and less and suddenly shuts down. And then when you relax, like the stress is gone, you move away from the situation, suddenly the name pops back into your head. The thing that you wanted to say suddenly comes to your lips. And
right.
And part of it is managing the stress and knowing that you have a routine that will help you make it possible to, you know, confront those situations confidently and comfortably.
That is a difficult, I mean, I've had that myself where I'm thinking of something and I'm used to, you know, I'm trying to remember the name of a restaurant or the name of a person or whatnot. I get to it in the conversation. It's just like, you're going to have to give me a few minutes. I'm having a senior moment.
Right.
I hear that from more and more people these days. How do we avoid that senior moment and find that, you know, let the roulette wheel slow down a little bit so that name drops into place?
Right. Well, that's what the memory training is all about, is that it trains you to know that your mind can slow things down, that you can, you know, calm the mechanism a little bit and protect and make the asset work, you know, effectively by in a sense almost distracting yourself and relaxing the stress so that your brain can process and recall information. And so that's one of the things that I focus on by teaching these deliberate techniques and these systems, these systematic ways of organizing and remembering information. and then applying it to things that matter to people, whether it's names or facts or numbers or presentations or concepts. It's just a function of training yourself to do this, and then in the training, your confidence grows, and those moments don't stress you the way that they used to, so that you can say, oh, I realize that it's not coming yet, but it will come. And the expectation then just builds the success.
Well, that's fantastic. So for you listeners out there that are a Vistage member or Vistage chair or members of other business organizations, this is a universal topic. Everybody can benefit from this. So I want to, you know, think if you can remember, get in touch with Scott. And Scott, tell our listeners, you have also a system that they can get on your website and learn more about this as well, so they don't have to wait to see you speaking somewhere. How do they get that, and what's it all about?
Well, thank you. My website is memorypower.com. And if you go there, you'll see a link that says connect, and also there it'll say Bill Black, and there's an offer, and you're welcome to go there to contact me, and we'll be happy to send you an invitation for some of the materials that we have at a discount to Bill Black listeners. Also, it lists my travel schedule for Vistage and YPO and the other groups that I speak to and where I'm traveling, and possibly if I'm in your city, you'd be welcome to be my guest to sit in on a session if the opportunity presents itself. Or, of course, you could always call me. And, Bill, naturally, you know the number they would call, right? Because it begins 888. What are the next three numbers people would call?
711-1215.
And the last four?
1215.
There you go, 1215. So
did you really teach me your phone number, Scott? Nice job.
That's correct. And anybody else who's listening, it's out there too. But, you know, it's all about, you know, once you get the right people, you want to give them the right perspective and you want them to behave properly right now. And so I want to be the person to help you make that happen. And so if you have a challenge, you're doing some kind of transition and you want people to remember things differently, your cultural focus has changed or your website's being rebuilt and you want people to be able to know it, you know, I'd be happy to share with you how to go about making that happen, and certainly love to lead you in that exercise if you're interested in making that a part of the way in which your business works.
I think it's fascinating. And Scott, I want to consider this as part one of a multi-part interview, because we're talking about self-improvement with building your memory, but think about the self-empowerment when you're able to talk to people knowing how they're going to remember and making yourself memorable during that presentation. That is a gem that everybody can learn about, and we're going to have to save that one for the next time, but I really want to thank you for coming on. It's been very fascinating. 888-711-1215. Thanks very much. We'll do some subliminal material in here. Scott, great job.
Thank you.
Really a pleasure to meet you. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I did as well. Look forward to taking it to the next level with you next time.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us. Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio. Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome back, everyone. I want to tell you a brief story in the remaining few minutes that we have today. I want to tell you a story about a good friend and client of mine. Let's call him Jim. Jim has been a good friend of mine for many years. He's a business owner. He's been building up his business to the point where it was earning him a very, very nice living, let's say mid six figures for himself and his family. A good, strong key employee, 60 employees. Jim approached me about 2 months ago, very excited because he had found a business he wanted to buy that had been somewhat mismanaged. And that business was in his industry, but in a different location. So he was working out a deal, had gone to banks and had figured out where he could get financing to buy that other business that he could basically bolt on to his business, double the size of his business, for a song, because it had been mismanaged. Now, here's another story inside of itself. The other business up in the northern part of the state had been owned by a dad who turned it over to his son. The son mismanaged the business. There wasn't enough communication between the two. There wasn't the skill set necessary to run the business. Dad thought the son could handle it, but he couldn't. So now they're in a fire sale position. So that would benefit my friend Jim. Now, Jim has lined up the financing. He's all excited. I see him on a Friday night. He's ready to go to the banks on the next week and pull the trigger on all this. Again, Jim has about 60 employees. Jim has a very strong key manager in place, and he's confident they're going to be able to take over this bolt on this new business and in effect double the size of their business and more than double the value of their business by getting more value from the purchase. Here's the hitch. That was Friday night. On Sunday night, Jim is exercising on a treadmill and has a massive heart attack while on that treadmill. Now, I'll tell you that Jim was only 56 years old. He had been on some blood pressure medicine and that type of thing, nothing that a lot of us haven't seen or been on. But he has a massive heart attack. Here's the problem. As he falls, he hits his head and is brain dead when he gets to the hospital, and they end up deciding to pull the plug because he would have absolutely no quality of life. His life changed just like that. I get the call from Jim's spouse on Monday saying, I've got some bad news. Jim is gone. And he told me, if anything happens, I should call you. I come into the picture, I take a look, and I assess the scene. There are several things that I wish I could have had a time machine in about 12 weeks to go back and fix that were not in place, that were not handled properly. The list is long, and it started with the basics of planning, estate planning documents, a living trust, a will, powers of attorney, and healthcare documents, healthcare authorization documents. As it was difficult for his wife to make healthcare decisions, but they did get made. It could have been very different if Dan and his wife were in a car accident together, as far as choosing to either continue or end his life based on his ability and his abilities. But in any event, Jim's gone, and now we've got to worry about many, many things. First of all, who owns the business? Well, his wife does, but because there was no living trust in place, we have to find the articles of incorporation. We have to ascertain that she, in fact, does become the owner. We have to satisfy the courts because of that. We have to go to probate, even though they were listed as community property, because we have to take him off the title so that she can decide what to do with the business. We have to talk to the key employee about whether or not he would be willing to step in and take over the business, because Jim's wife really isn't capable of running the business, and unfortunately, it's not something she wants to take on. It's a very difficult business. It's a dirty business. It's a male-dominated business. It requires a lot of people being out in the field. It just requires a lot of day-to-day management. And by the way, the business doesn't take a day off because Jim died. The business continues on day by day. So we have to decide how we will sell the business to Jim's key employee when he has really no money except for the salary he earns from the business. So we have to get the accountant involved and decide how we're going to do that, when in fact we do have to hire someone to take over Jim's duties. Just because he's gone doesn't mean his duties don't continue on. So we have to do that. We have to figure out what's going to happen with the properties that Jim and his wife owned that the business rents from them, because there's no formal lease agreements in place. So we have to engage commercial property individuals. We have to engage attorneys. We have to decide what's a fair amount of rent. Can the business handle that? We have to button down a lot of things that needed to be buttoned down. And we have to establish what will happen in the event that the key employee cannot successfully run the business or does not want to successfully run the business. So in effect, we have a lot of people scurrying around. The one thing that went right, and this is very important for your own planning, is that at least Jim had $1 million of life insurance that went to the spouse. So it took some pressure off. I wish there were $3 million. I wish there were $5 million, but there was at least $1 million. Took some of the pressure off of the sale being everything for her, but it did not offset the fact that the business will still have to be sold for cash. Assets will have to be sold to raise cash to provide income for her and her family. By the way, they have a couple of children that are becoming young adults, still have needs. That those all have to be taken care of. So while we're taking care of all these financial issues, of course, there are emotional issues that happen along the way, terrible things that we have to deal with, just the grieving of the loss of a very loved individual who had over 500 people at his memorial ceremony, a tremendous amount of grief between the mother and the daughter and the son, who all adored the father. So we're dealing with all of these issues, and I want to bring up this horrific story because we talk about what would happen if anything were to happen to our clients all the time, but this is a real-life case. It's fresh in my mind, and I just want to make sure that you're aware that without having done very basic planning, getting your living trust and will in order, number one, making sure you have the proper amount of insurance so the business does not have to be sold immediately as the sole source of revenue for the individuals you leave behind. Having instructions left behind, what we call business continuity instructions, for people that come in behind you to figure out, well, if we can't sell it to the key employee, what are some leads? Where would you go if you were in this situation? Where would you instruct us to talk to someone and learn about whether they would buy the business or not? Number four, making sure your bank documents are in order. If you have lines of credit, are those lines going to be pulled because you die? Are there covenants that require those to be pulled? And is there any way to offset that? Because these lines of credit for this business were called immediately within 2 days of the death. And they almost didn't make payroll because of that. And do you have other documents that need to be put into your vault? So my lesson, for instance, leases on companies, the corporate minutes, which had to be dug for and scrounged for, and they weren't up to date, by the way, but the corporate doctrines, are there stock certificates? Are they signed properly? Is everything in order? Has everything been reviewed? So I just want to implore upon you that there are five key areas that you need to think about with your planning, and they should all be in your vault. Your corporate documents, including a buy-sell agreement if you have other partners and making sure it's up to date. Business continuity instructions that you leave behind that tell us, give us some leads on what the problem areas might be that have been thought through and what's the plan of action for those. Your will, trust, and other estate planning documents and making sure that those are up to date so that any titles to any assets will transfer smoothly and properly, including making sure that those assets are set up properly. Your property documents, for instance, LLCs or lease agreements or other things that deal with any real properties that you own, because those can be a real mess, and negotiating for that after you're gone may be very difficult. And your financing, your funding, your insurances. What insurances do you have? Play it out. Make sure that if you're on a treadmill, if you go suddenly, that your insurance is going to come into play and not create a situation whereby for a few more dollars you could have created a solution. You could have had the several million dollars you needed so that your family would not have to worry so much about what happens with the business. We could have virtually given the business to the key employee without worrying about so much whether he's going to be able to make it this enough cash flow to support the family while he's trying to grow the business. And 60 people, 60 families that are employed by this business wouldn't be in such jeopardy. It's not difficult. It's a very simple planning process, and I implore upon all of you to get your planning done, get your documents in your vault, take care of this side of the business while you can before the unfortunate happens to you. This is Bill Black. I'm going to sign off right now, and I want to thank you for listening in. We're here for you, our heroes, private business owners, so you can listen to advisors, authors, and thought leaders and get yourself well planned. Thanks very much. Have an awesome day. We'll see you again tomorrow on our long show where we'll have 9 guests with a wide variety of topics. It's going to be very interesting. Join us.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.